So yeah, at first I was like really nervous that we weren't going to get any ghost stories, but like, and we had like one or two, and I was like, we only have like 2 days left and I don't think anybody's going to send us their ghost stories. So, and now we've got probably too many.
Yeah, no, I saw the first one and meant to send it in, but I started a new job and completely forgot. So when I saw the second call out on Facebook, I was like, now is my time.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Conspiracies and Cryptids. This week, I've got the other half of What's in Your Hometown with me. So I've got Sam with me. We had Julia last time. So Sam, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself this time?
Hi. So I am Julia's other half. We have a podcast called What's in Your Hometown, where we talk about true crime and then some urban legend ghosty stuff in between. And we will be getting back to it shortly. We're actually trying to figure out a schedule right now to start recording.
Awesome. No, I'm excited to have you guys back for that because I missed that podcast. So
we miss it too. We've also started recording a second show. We don't know when we'll release it, but it's called Disclaimer, Results May Vary.
Yeah, Julia told us about that. Yeah,
so. give out unsolicited relationship advice.
I'm looking forward to that one too. That's going to be a good one. So
we've had a lot of fun recording that one.
That's awesome. Yeah, I can't wait to hear that. So, because just you guys have such good chemistry. So it's like you guys are always like both like bubbly and like feel like a good like 10 minutes of every episode is just you guys giggling. And that just makes me happy. So I love it.
Pretty much. Yeah.
So when I was go ahead.
When I was living in Las Vegas, it was that was just our time to catch up with each other. It was the only time we had to catch up with each other.
Right. But so I'm going to ask you a retrospective question for something that you haven't done yet, because that's the way of recording is we record in the past for the future. So how was your Halloween? Because this comes out November 1st.
Ooh, it was good. I'm going to say retrospectively, it was amazing.
Even though it's week till Halloween, it was great.
Even though it was a week till Halloween. I'm actually going up to Morgantown to hang out with Julia on Halloween, and it'll be the first time we've seen each other since she visited me in Las Vegas. Well, so
it's
going
to be so much fun. What do you guys have planned?
Just sitting around watching movies and...
You could watch the new season of Unsolved Mysteries that went up on Netflix.
I saw that. Here's the thing. Julia is a scaredy cat. She does love true crime, so we might watch Unsolved Mysteries, but I want to get her to watch like a horror movie with me. We'll see how it goes.
Well, there is a movie that ties in with my topic this week, so maybe you guys could watch that. And it's not like super horror-ish, but it's definitely sci-fi-ish.
You know what? There's a movie that ties in with mine as well.
Well, cool. Well, that is a good that is a good segue into our podcast. So this is Conspiracies and Cryptids. We talk about conspiracies and cryptids. we're pretty straight to the point with our title. So we're going to shake the penny for our thoughts to see which of us goes first. You've got a cryptid this week, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just want to make sure that I didn't accidentally both cover conspiracy theories.
No, I got a cryptid urban legend mix up.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to let you choose. And then, you know, I'm trying to like, let the act like stick with the penny because let's see I always win. I always win. And I don't know why. And my luck is never that good, but apparently when it comes to picking when it comes to a coin toss for my podcast, it's like, you're always going to go first. And it's like, okay, but I'm going to let you pick and then we'll see if I want to let the penny actually choose. So
heads.
It's tails. What the hell? I mean, I can't make this up. I just can't like... I don't know what is like. I shake it in a shot glass. It's not like I'm even looking at it, and I flip it over on the table and just go with it. And it's always me first.
Julie and I actually took a page from y'all's book and we started doing a coin toss.
Yeah.
But we do it on an app, and every time I move my phone slightly, it keeps going off. I have deleted so many times where I'm yelling at this coin app on my app or on my phone.
All right, I will go first. just because the name of the show is Conspiracies and Cryptids and I'm covering a conspiracy, I guess I'll go first. I feel bad not letting the guest go first. And then I often feel bad not letting Tessa ever go first, but you know. Especially during like Women's Month. I was like, I'm not going first during Women's Month. That's not fair.
The coin says no.
The coin is sexist, apparently. When you think about conspiracy theories, the most popular ones almost always seem to kind of revolve around like the U.S. government or the U.S. military. Mm-hmm. We've talked about Project Pegasus in the past, which was government time travel. There's popular conspiracy theories about Lincoln and Kennedy's assassinations. So it's just like there's a common theme. Don't trust the U.S. government, which that's fair.
To be fair.
To be fair, that is fair.
Yeah.
So, but what if I told you that there was allegedly an experiment done to render military vehicles invisible back in the 1940s?
If it's true, I want one.
So this is a conspiracy theory that I've been interested in for years and wanted to talk about for a while. But for some reason, I always forget the name of it, which for it being one of my favorite conspiracy theories, it doesn't really seem to make sense that I would always forget what it's called, but I do.
I forgot my name once. It's okay.
So this is called the Philadelphia Experiment.
Oh, I've heard the name, but I don't know what it's about.
Yeah,
I don't know
it's wildly popular. So a lot of people have probably heard the name of it. And there was a movie that came out about it in 1984 by the same name. So I will get into a little bit of what it is and then break down the whole story. So the Philadelphia Experiment, like I said, is an alleged military experiment that was performed in order to render military vehicles such as boats invisible by using electrical generators in order to bend or refract light around an object. It also supposedly teleported the ship as well. So other theories related to this one stated that there was an experiment going there was another experiment going on in Nazi Germany to kind of like combat this because we were basically doing this during World War II, 1943, to combat the Axis powers. So apparently Nazi Germany at this time, this around the same time, was doing an experiment into anti-gravity, you know, so that they could fly things without needing propellers and jet engines and stuff like that.
I want to say nice, but then it's like Nazi Germany Nazi as well.
Yeah, we don't need them finding out that, so.
I'd like my skateboard from Back to the Future, but I don't want it to come from Nazi Germany.
At what cost? At what cost do we want a hoverboard? Okay, so the story behind this is in 1956, a man named Carl M. Allen, who went by many aliases over the years, and I'm just going to list them because they're all funny to me because there's so many of them, and he didn't really get creative until like the last one.
So they're like Larry and
no, I mean, so his name was Carl M. Allen. So his aliases included Carl Meredith Allen.
Oh no.
Carlos Miguel Allende, Carl Michael Allen, Colonel Carl M. Allen, Carl Christopher Allen, Senior Professor and Colonel Carlos Miguel Cristofero Allende. And then he got really creative with the last one, Dr. Carl, with a K this time, Merdit Allenstein.
He was not going to give up Carl.
Like, if he couldn't go with Carl, he went with Carlos.
Carlos.
So it was just, you know, it's like those self-insert fan fiction names that you come up with where it's not quite your name, but it's still your name.
Yeah. No, he was like, I was born with this. I'm going to take this to my grave. Every alias I have.
So, so he sent a couple of letters to an astronomer and known UFO researcher named Morris Jessup after Jessup's 1955 book, The Case for UFOs, was released. In his letters, he wrote about a secret World War II military experiment he witnessed while serving in the Merchant Marines in 1943. This experiment was supposedly based on Albert Einstein's field theory, which states that forces like electromagnetism and gravity are unified forces and could be combined to accomplish things that would normally be considered impossible, such as bending light around an object to make it basically invisible.
So I'm going to trust Albert Einstein on almost anything he says.
This theory was actually never proven.
Oh.
So, yeah. So it's still just kind of a theory. And if anything, it might have been disproven. I didn't look too deep into that because it kind of went over my, you know, high school education head.
I understood some of what you said.
Yeah.
And I understood was just like, Albert Einstein, okay.
I understood the words, but not the combination of those words.
Yeah.
But
same.
So basically, Albert Einstein was actually, and some of this is actually true, like Albert Einstein was contracted by the Navy as a what's the word? Basically, he was like not an informant. He gave them information and they you know would go to him for questions and stuff like that anytime that they you know did. So I can't think of the English word for that.
I can't think of it either.
Either way, you know, he was hired and contracted by the Navy to, like, you know, be there in case that they had questions about his experience and stuff. So that actually did happen. He actually did get money from the Navy's payroll for a while. So according to Alan, in his numerous letters, I think he sent three. And I'm not sure if I've actually seen the real emails because one of the sources I went to, like, the website was all about the Philadelphia experiment, but it felt really fictiony.
Yeah.
Like, it was set up to be like, this is the legit thing.
You know,
and they had, like, the letters and they had Carl's backstory, but it's like everywhere else I looked was like, we're not sure who Carl Allen was. That might have not even been his real name, but we don't know who he was. And this website is like, Carl was born this day and lived this place. And, I was like, Wikipedia doesn't even know that.
Well, it wouldn't be a good conspiracy theory if you had all the evidence on an accredited site. Yeah.
So, you know, and then the site also had like the letters that he wrote. And I'm like, other sites are saying that letters were lost. And this website is like, has them perfectly all documented. So I'm like, I'm not sure if it was credible or not. It might have been. But I didn't take too much stock in it. Either way, he wrote a couple letters to this UFOologist about this experiment. So anyway, according to Alan, on the morning of October 28th, 1943, the USS Eldridge, which was harbored at the Philadelphia Naval Shipyard in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, was rendered invisible in front of numerous witnesses. Apparently, witnesses claimed that an eerie green-blue glow surrounded the hull of the ship as her generator spun up, and then suddenly the Eldridge disappeared in a blue flash of light.
Ooh.
Right? The ship was then supposedly seen by the crew of the civilian merchant ship, the SS Andrew Feruseth, in Norfolk Naval Shipyard, in Virginia, which is about 272 miles or 437 kilometers away, before disappearing again and reappearing back in Philadelphia within a matter of 10 minutes.
Oh, okay. So we have, it's not time travel, but transportation or
teleportation.
Teleportation.
Yeah. So it went invisible, teleported to Virginia, popped back into sight, blinked back out of sight and back into Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Oh.
And apparently, like I said, it happened within 10 minutes. And when it got to Pennsylvania, all its clocks were 10 minutes behind.
So the time didn't go with it.
So also time travel.
Oh!
So
this is amazing.
So some reports also said that the ship teleported to another dimension where it encountered aliens and also teleported through time.
Oh, Lord. Listen, so I've seen Event Horizon. I'm just not messing with that.
We're getting to that. I'm not even kidding. There is some Event Horizon sort of stuff in this.
Oh, I'm so excited.
So now that's a good horror movie. If you want a good sci-fi horror movie, that one is intense. Like, I would not recommend that to the lighthearted.
Because they cut out the worst of it, too.
Oh, yeah, they absolutely did. So for any of those of you who are listening who don't know, Event Horizon is a sci-fi horror movie that came out in, like, what, the late 90s, early
2000s? Uh-huh. It was during Sam Neill's heyday, before Peaky Blinders.
Yeah, starring Sam Neill. And it's basically about this, like, rescue mission for this spaceship that's been floating around lost in space. And they get on the spaceship, and the spaceship was basically supposed to like time travel, and it ended up traveling through hell.
Mm-hmm.
And the ship is possessed by hell itself.
Yeah.
And the rescue crew gets onto the ship and finds the bodies of all like the crewmates that have been dead for years. And they slowly get picked off by the entities of hell. And Sam Neill gets like possessed by the devil.
Possessed. Well, it was his, it was him. It was like Sam Neill's machine. And he was like, take me.
Yeah. It was really freaky. There's some really graphic imagery in that movie. So yeah, definitely not for the faint of heart,
but it's a good movie.
Okay. So upon returning to Philadelphia and becoming visible again, it said that classified military documents reported that the Eldridge crew were affected by the events in disturbing ways. Some went insane. Others developed mysterious illnesses. Some crew members complained about severe nausea afterwards. And others still were said to have been fused with the ship, still alive, but with limbs sealed to the metal, including one sailor who ended up on a deck below the level of where he was to begin with and had his hand embedded in the steel hull of the ship.
Oh, God. So they went complete event horizon.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
So, yeah. So this is all what Alan is saying is that basically this ship teleported through time and space. And because of it, like the people on the ship weren't able to kind of like keep up with the ship's movement. And kind of got fused with
the ship.
With the ship.
Oh my God.
It's disgusting and terrifying. And
that's like, horrifying.
I know. I know. So needless to say, Jessup, the ufologist, mind you, wrote Alan off as being a crackpot and planned to ignore the whole thing, which I always find, like, I believe, like I've said it before and I'll say it till the day I die. I believe in aliens and UFOs. But most ufologists are a little out there, you know, so for a ufologist, like a published author ufologist to write somebody off as a crackpot, it's got to be a pretty out there concept.
Yeah, they've got to be like, no. I've studied for years and this is not something.
Like, listen, I know my wackadoo theories and this one's a little, this one.
That
this,
one's
this
too is, much for me.
This is too much for me. So despite the fact that Jessup never really engaged Alan and didn't write him back and planned to just kind of ignore the whole thing, the next year in 1957, Jessup was contacted by the Office of Naval Research because they had received an anonymous package containing a paperback copy of Jessup's book in a manila envelope marked Happy Easter.
Oh, that's a little shady.
Like, just, I'm sorry, that's just like I picture that and I just start giggling. It's just an unassuming manila envelope with Happy Easter on the front,
on it.
No return address, nothing on it, and inside it is the book The Case for UFOs.
Oh Lord.
But it gets better. The book was filled with meticulous annotations claiming that extraterrestrial technology allowed the U.S. government to make breakthroughs in the field of unified field theory by Albert Einstein. The book had been annotated meticulously in almost all of its margins in three different shades of pink ink. The annotations were designed to look like they were being written by three different authors, one maybe even extraterrestrial, with only one of the authors having been given a name, Jemmy, J-E-M-I.
Not Carl?
No, not Carl this time. He got a little creative here.
He got just a little creative.
Well, it's not his character, so he can make it as whoever he wants. The other two didn't have names, so the Office of Naval Research, or the ONR, labeled the other two Mr. A and Mr. B.
Mm-hmm.
The annotations referred to each other as gypsies, which by today's standards is a very no-no word.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to be saying it again, but that's what they referred to each other as. And they discussed two different types of quote-unquote people living in outer space. So their text contained non-standard use of capitalization and punctuation. So basically, you know, capitalized.
Random words were capitalized.
Like, you know the SpongeBob meme? You know, like the bird SpongeBob meme where it's like capital and uncapital back and forth. I'm picturing it like written like that.
Gosh, that would be so god-awful to read. If every annotation was like
Every annotation is written in like meme speak.
Yes.
I would not want to read meme speak annotations.
Mm-mm.
But that's what they did. So let's see. Their text contained non-standard use of capitalization and punctuation and detailed a lengthy discussion of the merits of various elements of Jessup's assumptions in the book. So basically, this alien and two other people were critiquing Jessup's book in meme speak annotations.
The shade of it all.
And they didn't send it to him. They were like, we're going to critique this man's work and send it to the office of the Navy.
Oh no. He said it was impossible and we just do not agree.
So, based on the handwriting style and the subject matter, Jessup and the ONR concluded that a large part of the writing was Alan's, and others have come to the same conclusions, that the three styles of annotations are from the same person using three different pens, trying to make it look like they're writing in three different ways.
But if it wasn't, could you imagine you spent your entire life dedicated to UFOs and then you get a message from aliens that are just like, we really don't like you.
We want to critique your work with a pink pen, no less.
With a pink pen.
Because it's a little bit less threatening than a red pen, but not enough. So it was at this point that two officers working for the ONR at the time had copies of this annotated book printed, which honestly, like when I first read that, I was like, well, that's really weird and unprofessional. But then I started thinking about it like, listen, I'm in the military. If I got sent some crackpots, you know, ramblings about some book on UFOs, I'd probably take it down to the photocopier in my office and make multiple copies for everybody to see.
I would make multiple copies and then send it to them every holiday for Christmas.
Well, we didn't have a return address, remember?
To Jessup.
Oh God. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Every holiday. Merry Christmas.
Happy Halloween.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Oh Lord.
Oh.
How petty. Anyway, I love it.
But yeah, so these two officers, they had the book printed. Though how many copies seems to vary, as three different sources gave me three different numbers. The Navy History and Heritage Command's website, which is a very official Navy website, says 25 copies. Wikipedia says 100 copies, and military.com says 127 copies, with the latter two sites claiming that the Navy actually funded the copies being printed and worked with a small Texas-based printing company called Vero Manufacturing Company in order to produce and distribute these copies, which would go on to spread this story further.
Well, there you go. If you want to publish a book, just write crazy annotations and send it to the Navy.
So either these two officers funded it out of their own pockets, which I don't know why that would become Navy funded, or the Navy itself did in fact fund up to 127 copies of this man's crazy ramblings to be printed and distributed.
Yeah.
And they like those copies were literally referred to as like the Vero copies because it was made by the Vero Manufacturing Company. Huh. Yeah. The story gained even more popularity in 1979 when the book The Philadelphia Experiment, Project Invisibility by co-authors Charles Berlitz and William Moore was published. The book took the standpoint that all of this was factual and based on real evidence and eyewitness accounts. It also expanded on stories of bizarre happenings, lost unified field theories by Albert Einstein, and government cover-ups, all based on Alan's letters to Jessup. The story, like I mentioned, has also been made into a science fiction movie about time travel that came out in 1984 called The Philadelphia Experiment, which I fully intend to watch as soon as possible. In fact,
yeah, now I want to watch it.
Let me look up and see if I can't find if it's streaming anywhere, because I want to watch it and I definitely want to let all of our listeners know where to watch it.
I also want to watch Event Horizon again.
Yes, that too.
Which I think is on Netflix.
So let's see. The Philadelphia Experiment movie is available on Tubi, which I've never heard of. It's a free streaming app and the movie's free on there, but it's also available on YouTube for about $2.99 US dollars, Vudu for $2.99, and Amazon Prime for $6.99. So yes, if you want to go watch The Philadelphia Experiment and then message us and let me know what you thought, I will absolutely talk to you about it, because I will probably be watching it. Like, by the time this episode comes out, I will probably have watched it.
I'll probably have made Julia watch it with me.
But yeah, so that's where you can watch it. Vudu, YouTube, Amazon Prime, and Tubi. You know, so if you have Tubi, I guess you can go watch it there. I'm not going to go watch it on Tubi. I will pay for it.
Nah, I'll go to Amazon Prime.
Yeah, I'll pay the $6.99 and watch it on Amazon Prime, because I don't like watching movies on YouTube.
I don't either. Like, YouTube used to be a place you went to for free movies, and now you have to pay to watch them.
Like, I have a couple of movies that I've bought on YouTube, but it just feels weird to me. I don't know why. It's like, YouTube is for, you know, like, crappy videos, meme videos, and Vine compilations. It is not a serious platform for me to go pay to watch a movie.
Watch people. You either watch memes, you watch somebody play games, or in the old days, you went and watched the movies, but they were on this tiny screen in the corner. Screen, yep.
All right. So possible explanations, because officially this experiment didn't happen. Officially, mm-hmm. this is just the crazy ramblings of, you know, Carl Allen. But possible explanations.
Or Carlos Allende.
Possible explanations, though, are that the green glow was St. Elmo's fire, which is a real weather phenomenon in which plasma is created in a strong electrical field, giving off a bright glow almost like fire. So St. Elmo's fire is really real. And there were a lot of like stories back in like pirate days, you know, where they'd look up and see it looked like their ship was on fire.
Yeah.
But it wasn't. It's just plasma glowing in the atmosphere. Super interesting. You can look it up. It's really interesting to look at. Another explanation is that it was a degaussing experiment used to cloak the ship from magnetic-based radar and missiles. So degaussing is a process in which a system of electrical cables are installed around the circumference of the ship's hull, running from bow to stern on both sides. So basically, they've got electrical wires inside the ship running the whole length of the ship.
And that's a real thing?
This is a real thing. So, and measured electrical currents are passed through these cables to cancel out the ship's magnetic field. Degaussing equipment was installed in the hull of Navy ships and could be turned on whenever the ship was in waters that might contain magnetic mines, usually shallow waters in combat areas. It could be said that degaussing correctly done would make the ship invisible to sensors of magnetic mines, but the ship still remains visible to the human eye and radar and then underwater listening devices.
That's really cool, though.
Yeah, so it's just like, you know, magnetic, anything that used like a magnetic system to locate stuff, that wouldn't see them.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Other explanations, there are inland canals that connected Norfolk Naval Shipyard or Philadelphia Naval Shipyard that weren't being used at the time for commercial uses. So they could have gone those almost 300 miles a lot quicker than going out and around. Now, granted, not in 10 minutes, mind you, but it would have taken a couple of hours. But that's a possibility.
And to then explain why Norfolk saw them, at least.
And then another thing is that it's just a hoax and urban legend, you know, which to me, it just sounds like, to me, it sounds more like an urban legend. You know, some crazy guy started a story and, you know, and just went off the deep end, you know. So In conclusion, though, according to all official government statements and sites, like I said, this experiment never happened. And if it did, it was regarding cloaking from torpedoes, but not from the naked eye. So, yeah, if it did happen, it was a degaussing experiment. However, as with all conspiracy theories and stories regarding to the U.S. military and government, there's always the underlying suspicion that, like, maybe it did actually happen, and maybe they're just covering it up. I mean, we've discussed in past episodes the MK Ultra project, which sounds super fake and messed up, but was in fact very real.
Very real.
You know? And then we've also talked about how the government has worked with companies to cover up technology before it was ready to be released to the public. So it's like they do that kind of stuff. You
also,
know?
If it was real and they got the shit back with people fused into it, I wouldn't want that released to the public.
No, they would absolutely cover it. They would immediately cover that up.
Exactly.
That is the last thing that you would want leaking to the public. So, yeah, it's definitely possible that this experiment could have happened. Though to what extent, though, I'm not really sure. But, you know, like the people being fused with the ship, it does sound like something out of Event Horizon, not real life. So it's like that part, probably not. But like the stuff about technological advancements to make things invisible, that's definitely something that the military would want. And probably,
and I can see them experimenting with it.
Well, it's something that they would want and that they probably do look into. You know, I mean, just as recently as the 1980s, the U.S. military developed stealth planes, you know, which were made of mostly plastics in order to render them invisible to, like, contemporary methods of detection, such as, like, radar, sonar, and infrared. You know, so it's like they definitely don't – they're looking into things about how to cloak themselves. So it's like – if they could find a way to cloak their ships like they do on Star Trek, you better believe – that they've looked into it, and I guarantee they're probably looking into it right this second.
Yeah.
So it's
they're still running experiments that maybe not fusing people to the walls of the ship, but I am sure that they're trying to figure out how to.
I have no doubt in my mind. So it's like, did this experiment happen? Maybe, like probably not, but it would not surprise me if there were experiments like this happening constantly.
Yeah.
You know, especially with the military, you know.
I feel the same way.
So, you know, like, that's the sort of technology that I don't foresee them ever really needing in, like, well, I don't see us needing, like, from a civilian standpoint. I don't need to be able to cloak my car to drive down the street. That's just dangerous, you know, because think about the amount of car accidents you'd have if cars were invisible. You know?
Yep.
So it's like, there's really no incentive for them to tell the civilian populace about invisible technology, because really civilians don't need invisible technology for really anything.
No. We would 100% misuse it.
Oh yeah. 100%. You know, so it's like really the military is kind of the only thing that would need it.
Yeah.
So why would they tell any of us? Absolutely. They would cover it up, and absolutely they're probably looking into it.
Absolutely. You know. I agree. Absolutely.
So, that's all I have to say about it. But it's like, it's a super creepy and interesting story that's probably more urban legend than fact. But as with most conspiracy theories, it always leaves you with that kind of question of, well, maybe it could be real, you know, but we don't know, you know. And yeah, this is definitely the kind of thing that they would cover up. So.
But to a lesser effect, maybe it is something that happened.
Yeah, possibly. Once again, like you said, if people really were fused in with the metal of the ship, they 100% would do everything in their power to cover that up.
That's in the archives in Area 51. There is no way that's leaking ever.
Oh, Area 51. We almost had it.
Almost had it.
We should have done that. I'll bet you they had the cure for COVID in Area 51.
Just the issue of the men with guns.
All right, we're going to take a break. And when we get back, Sam's going to talk to us about her cryptid. And I'm excited.
I'm so excited.
Well, after a great break of just quoting vines back and forth to each other, we're ready to get back into it.
Yes.
Nothing says I love you in millennial like quoting Vines and Vines and SpongeBob to each other.
SpongeBob, I was going to say. Quoting SpongeBob. Early SpongeBob, not later SpongeBob.
Yeah,
early SpongeBob.
Up until like season four SpongeBob. If you can, you know, that's millennial love right there is Vines exactly. and SpongeBob.
It's like finding a friend in a crowd if you just scream out a SpongeBob quote and somebody else screams back at you.
All right, Sam, tell me about your cryptid.
Well, since it's about a week until Halloween when we record this, mm-hmm. and it'll be early November, so I have one last spooky monster for you.
Okay. All right.
So sit back, enjoy, and don't lose your head as I tell you about the Headless Horseman.
Yes. Oh, my God. Yes.
Oh. I was so excited when I realized I could do the Headless Horseman.
That is perfect. That is absolutely perfect. I am so ready for this.
So, most people know of the Headless Horseman from Washington Irving's The Legend of Sleepy Hollow, mm-hmm. where a headless apparition pursues an unfortunate schoolteacher to what the residents of Sleepy Hollow believe to be his death.
Right. Yep.
There have been numerous television and film representations of the story, from Tim Burton's 1999 film Sleepy Hollow to Disney's classic The Adventure of Ichabod and Mr. Toad to Fox's TV adaption in 2013 of mm-hmm. Sleepy Hollow.
Right.
There's even some songs about it, which I didn't know that there were songs about Sleepy Hollow.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I had no idea. But the idea of the Headless Horseman didn't start with Washington Irving, and it certainly didn't start in America.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That I didn't know.
Yep, yep.
So he is kind of a cryptid.
Yeah.
Oh, well, oh, okay. Yeah.
He is an urban legend throughout different countries and different times.
Okay. Oh, I'm ready for this.
In fact, the legend has been around since the Middle Ages.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
And you can see this in Sir Gawain and the Green Knight, which is an Arthurian legend that describes Sir Gawain, one of the Knights of the Round Table, severing the head of the great green giant knight, only for said giant to gather his head, brandish it to Queen Guinevere, and then ride out of the hall, telling Gawain he promised to receive a blow back.
So no head?
No head.
Sorry, we were just quoting Vines, and it's like, I can't not.
No head. But
I couldn't. Sorry.
That epic tale, funnily enough, dives into the idea of chivalry. So it's just about knight chivalry.
Okay.
But we aren't here to talk about the literary Headless Horseman or the English literature Headless Horseman.
Okay. Yes.
We want to discuss the demons, fairies, and apparitions supposedly haunted real people. You know, the fun stuff.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Nothing screams fun like demons.
Oh, get ready.
I love some demonic fun.
The first one is my favorite rendition of this monster, and it's the Irish one.
Okay.
And I'll tell you why it's my favorite after I describe it to you.
Okay.
So, in Irish lore, the Headless Horseman is known as the Dúlahán.
Okay.
And it is a male or female demonic fairy who rides around carrying his head under one arm while the other wields a whip made of human spines.
I love everything about that.
I love it so much. And the reason why I love it is because it reminds me of like the really cheesy, like late 80s, early 90s, metal music album covers.
Oh, yeah. No, 100%. Yes. 100%. I can picture that. And it's, like, it's written
so
in
much.
A font that you really can't read.
Exactly.
Yes.
I love it so much. But in any case, the Dúlahán rides around the countryside, and when he stops riding, a death occurs. So what he'll do is he'll stop in a town or on the road, calling out a name and then pointing at the named person, who immediately dies, like on the spot, just immediately dies.
Oh.
In other versions, he is the headless driver of a black carriage and wagon instead of just on a horse.
Okay.
And the wagon is said to be adorned with funeral objects, like skulls with candles in them. The wheels are made out of thigh bones. There's all kinds of different adornments to this carriage.
Okay.
Now, why make it terrifying.
Is that part of Irish lore as well?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I feel like I've heard of that. I can't remember what it's called, but it was in the movie Darby O'Gill and the Little People.
Oh, I've never seen that.
So we talked about that a couple years ago. Did I talk about leprechauns? I don't know. I talked about the Banshee. And that was also in Darby O'Gill and the Little People. And yeah, like at one point, like this black carriage with a headless horseman, and I completely forgot there was a headless horseman on it, comes to get him. Oh, it was the Doulahan. I just looked it up. Yeah. Yeah, it totally was. Okay. So yeah, that's in that movie. So yes, I had heard of that. Okay.
He's all sort right. of like a headless horseman, grim reaper creature within Irish lore.
That's what he was in the movie. Basically, in order to like save the life of his daughter or something like that, mm-hmm. he went with the Grim Reaper, the Doulahan instead in her place. So yeah. Sorry, well, I completely derailed right there. But yes,
you're good.
The movie. So that's why I heard of it.
There's no way really to keep the Doulahan away, mm-hmm. as all locks and gates will open to them once they approach. Although rumor has it, the Doulahan is afraid of gold. So just chuck some gold at it and it'll go away.
Yes, because I have that lying around.
Also, I'm afraid of gold. Chuck gold at me.
Yeah, right. I just have gold lying around, just ready to be chucked at evil spirits. So,
Stock up if you go to Ireland.
Apparently. Just get some of that leprechaun gold, I guess. Might as well just really make it like impossible, okay?
That's why everybody wants the gold at the end of the rainbow to keep the Grim Reaper away. Yeah,
they don't really want the riches. They just want something to throw at the Grim Reaper. Aw, now I feel bad for the Grim Reaper.
Don't. He's terrifying. I've looked up pictures. He's terrifying. So, according to some, the legendary headless horseman in Ireland evolved in Celtic lore from the ancient Celtic god of fertility, Crom Dubh, or Crom Croc.
Okay.
He's also known as the dark god of the burial mound. Crom Dubh was the chief Celtic idol of Ireland once upon a time.
Okay.
So an old Irish king would demand human sacrifices to this god every year. Okay. And the method of execution was beheading.
It was beheading, of course.
Mm-hmm. So when St. Peter drove the snakes out of Ireland, or when St. Patrick drove the snakes out of Ireland, mm-hmm. and Christianity grew, sacrificial rituals are banned. So the Doulahan was born.
Yeah, he had to find a new way to get souls.
Yep.
A new way to collect those Irish souls.
yep.
Okay.
And that's the Irish lore. Now, the Scottish lore, so just across the way, the Scottish have their own headless horseman legend.
Okay.
And in this one, it's much more localized. So the Scottish legend dates back to the 1300s or the 16th century, depending on who you talk to.
Okay.
In any event, it recounts the dispute between a clan chief and his son, Ewan. I hope I said that right. Okay. His son had a wife that was reminiscent of Lady Macbeth. She was very headstrong, and she pushed...
Ironically, she was headstrong.
Yeah. Well, she pushed him to bother his father repeatedly about his inheritance. So, like, the clan, the lands, the wealth, everything, until an argument broke out. In some stories, he hit his father over the head, and some, it was just an argument.
Okay.
So the argument soon blew out of proportion, so out of proportion that it could only be settled by a duel, or in some retellings, an actual battle. Full-blown battle.
I wish that we could go back to the days when arguments were settled with duels.
Me too.
Instead of a political debate, they have a duel to the death with swords.
Yes, I agree. 100%. I'm down for it.
Cut that out.
No, dueling 2021. Let's do it.
Oh my God. Okay.
So in some variations, it's a full-blown battle. And then in other variations, it's a duel. And that differs as well. Sometimes it's Ewan dueling his father. Sometimes it's Ewan dueling his uncle.
Okay.
Either way, the day before the duel was supposed to take place.
Stop let's not bring back dueling, because most of the time the wealthy didn't actually duel each other. They would
they used proxies to do it for them.
Yes, I just remembered that and was like, no, the presidential debate would just be, you know, some like Trump supporter and a Biden supporter going as proxies for Trump and Biden, and they would
listen. If we're going to bring it back, we can upgrade it to you have to finish your own duel.
Oh, if you don't think the 1% wouldn't find a way to bring proxies back immediately, then
that's true. If you offered me enough money, I'd be like, all right, fine.
All the people, all the proxies would just be millennials. Hey, one hand, I might get the money. The other hand, death. Either way,
win-win. Absolutely. Let's get this started.
It's a millennial's dream.
It's so true.
It's a millennial dream job.
Oh, God, yes. Oh, I would do it every day. You could set up your own business. Dueling for us.
Dueling
for you.
Oh, my God. Okay. I'm so sorry. I'm just... Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, I'm done. I'm done.
You're 100% correct. And the more I think about it, the more I really like the option. Oh, okay. Where was I? Oh, so the day before the duel was supposed to take place, Yuen came upon a fairy washing blood out of old clothes in the woods. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to keep it the PG version of the story because it gets real weird.
Okay.
So he came upon her and she predicted that if his servant failed to serve him butter at breakfast of his own volition, not if he asked for butter, but if his servant failed to serve him butter at breakfast the following day, he would not survive the duel.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The next morning.
That's really arbitrary, but okay.
The next morning, much to Ewan's dismay, no butter graced the breakfast table. Oh. But he still went into battle.
Oh, okay.
And he was promptly slain, decapitated.
Oh, of course. Yes. We're sticking on theme. Yes. Okay.
We're sticking on theme. And his horse, terrified, sprinted away with just Ewan's body strapped to the saddle.
Okay.
Ever since Glenmore, the site of the supposed beheading is haunted by the specter of a body riding on a black horse.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And like with the Duelahun, if a member of the McLean clan, which is Ewan's clan, sees the headless horseman, it's a foretelling of an imminent death in their own family. So it's either their death or the death of a family member.
Right, right.
So
his seed are the ones affected by this curse.
But his steed used to be heard galloping furiously around the old keep of the clan. But since the keep has long been unoccupied and is now in ruin, the clan lands are in the hands of strangers. And it seems like Yuen hasn't been heard recently.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
So even though he's not heard recently, he's still a famous apparition within Scotland. The tale even inspired Sir Walter Scott to include it in his poem, The Lady of the Lake. And it's just this little snippet, and it says, sounds too had come in midnight blast of charging steed careering past. Along Ben Tallish shingly side where mortal horsemen's ne'er might ride.
I like that. That's cool.
I do too.
That's cool. I just like poetry. It's neat.
I do too.
That's cool. I like that.
From Scotland, we go to Germany, and they have two headless horseman legends.
Okay.
So both are brought to us by none other than the Brothers Grimm, of course.
Of course, yes.
One legend talks of a wild huntsman named Hackelberg. On his deathbed, he begged God to allow him to continue riding in the hunt until Judgment Day. And God was like, sure, okay. I mean, if this is what you want, okay. So
talk about commitment to your hobbies, but okay. God, please let me do podcasting until Judgment Day.
God, please let me just continue playing all the video games that ever come out until Judgment Day.
Like, that does not sound fun. Like,
listen, that is my optimal.
Let me just do podcasting for eternity. That sounds... I don't care how much one likes one's hobby. Having to do it for eternity does not sound fun.
That's my dream. I just want to, if I, when I die, if everything is true, if everything's there, I don't, I want to be a ghost. I want to haunt people for the rest of eternity.
Okay. But you That's what I want. Like video games, but it's like, it doesn't sound like you get to play new video games. Pick one.
Oh God, no.
Because he's not like, you know, doing, you know, hunts all over the world. He's hunting in one spot. So
in one place,
one video game that you can play for the rest of eternity.
That's an interesting question. Which video game would you pick?
I don't know. I wouldn't want to play any of them for eternity. That just sounds, I know what it would be. That just sounds awful.
For me, it would 100% be Kingdom Hearts because I still have not beat Riku and I'm so mad about it that my spirit would stick around just to beat him.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe Ocarina of Time.
Oh, that's a good one.
Maybe. I mean, I've played that one more times than I can count.
Multiple times. Or so. The Sims. Heck, I'll play The Sims.
Yeah, no, if it was some sort of like simulator sort of game where every iteration is different, maybe that wouldn't be so bad. But it's like, yeah, a game with like a set linear storyline, playing that for eternity, that would be awful. Oh yeah. My God. Yes, that no thank you.
That's what hell is for gamers. You get to play No Man's Sky for the rest of your life. For the rest of eternity.
Fallout 76.
Yes. Okay. Where was I?
Germany.
Yes. So on his deathbed, he begged God to allow him to continue riding in the hunt until Judgment Day. Mm-hmm. And like many other legends, if you see him, it bespeaks of misfortune.
Okay.
Luckily, you can avoid this huntsman by remaining out of the woods once you hear the horns of the hunt. Mm-hmm. And those of us who like Norse mythology will note that this legend mirrors that of the Wild Hunt, which is led by the one, the only, Odin.
Yes. Yep. Yeah, it does.
So in a way, the Headless Horseman goes all the way back to Norse mythology.
Hmm. Okay. I would not have connected those two by any means, but that's cool.
The second legend speaks of a woman who goes out to gather acorns early one morning. After hearing a hunting horn, she sees a headless man astride a gray horse. He speaks to her, identifying himself as, God be with me, Hans Jagantafull.
Okay.
And telling her of his wicked life, saying that any who escape beheading for their crimes in life were doomed to wander headless throughout eternity.
So they'd be beheaded in the afterlife if they
would be beheaded in the afterlife.
Somehow managed to escape beheading in real life. That's that really sucks.
It's not fun, no. But yeah. This leads us all the way back, full circle, to the legend of Sleepy Hollow.
Okay, yeah.
See, during the American Revolution, the British, in order to suppress the rebellion, hired out Hessian mercenaries from Germany. Oh. And legend goes, during a battle, an American cannon soared through the air and took off the head of one of these mercenaries.
Oh.
And this is our very own Headless Horseman.
So he's German.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the Germans.
Yep, yep. And that's our Headless Horseman of Sleepy Hollow. Now, there's different mythologies as well. There's he's not always a bringer of death in Native American mythology. It's a warrior that was beheaded by, I think, bandits trying to protect his hometown. So he's seen riding around the town as a protective spirit.
Right, right.
But for most cultures, he is a harbinger of death.
Cool. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. The Native Americans did it the right way.
Yeah, I would rather have a protective spirit than the harbinger of death. I
absolutely would.
Although I love the image of a man holding like a head and then a whip made of spines and like singing Metallica and just riding around.
Oh man,
who's afraid of gold?
Some inexplicable reason afraid of gold, but yes,
he's inexplicably afraid of gold. But that is a sort of rundown of the different legends of the Headless Horseman.
I love that. I did not know that he was in so many different cultures. I just kind of assumed that it was just a fiction story made up by Washington Irving and, you know, just, you know, peddled around as like a Halloween, you know, classic tale that you tell to, you know, creep out kids and you know, and stuff like that. And, you know, put on a Disney movie for some reason. But, you know, okay.
It's the strangest Disney movie.
It's a good one, though. I love it.
I love it. But it's strange.
It is very strange. Honestly, I feel like Ichabod Crane was the fun one. And then Mr. Toad's Wild Ride was the terrifying one.
Yeah.
Especially because there's a whole scene of Mr. Toad driving around through hell.
Yeah.
For some reason.
Oh, Disney was dark.
That was some terrifying imagery.
Yeah.
You know, like, Ichabod was, that was, it was just a good one. You know, it had some good music in it. You know, it had some, like, the animation was beautiful. Ichabod was just a really weird looking person, and they did a really good job with that. And I will always remember, like, when the frogs were croaking and it sounded like his name.
Yes.
It was just, it was.
And they did a really good job with, like, the art of the Headless Horseman. Mm-hmm. He was really frightening.
Super intimidating, carrying, like, a pumpkin head and stuff like that. It was, like, it was really cool. Like, I might actually go watch that right now because I guarantee that's up on Disney Plus. So.
Oh, it is. It is. So. I showed it to a classroom of students who had never seen it before. And I was like, watch it with me, children.
Yeah, I might go watch that right now. But that's super interesting. Yeah, like I said, I didn't know that it was in any other cultures, even though in the back of my head, I knew about the Doolahan. I'd completely forgotten about it. But
it seems like a lot of cultures have like one. The Doolahan's very sort of broad for a lot of these Headless Horseman stories. A lot of cultures have like one centralized story.
Yeah.
And like, it's in one location.
Yeah. Like the Headless Horseman is this specific person.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool. Well, I guess that about wraps it up for us. Why don't you go ahead and tell people where they can find you and your podcasts on social media and everything.
So you guys can find us on Twitter and on Instagram at WIYHD. What's in your hometown? I always have to go over it. And you can write in to us at whatsinyourhometown@gmail.com.
Awesome. Yeah. Like I said, I can't wait for your podcast to come back. So I'm looking forward to that.
We're doing there was a new documentary on Netflix, like American Murderer or something, about the husband who killed his wife and his kids.
Oh my God.
And so our first episode coming back, guys, if you want to look forward to something, is just going to be divorce is cheaper than murder.
There's a lesson for you. Okay. So yeah, our social media though, and everything, it's CryptiPod pretty much anywhere. You can email us at conspiriesandcryptids@gmail.com. And we will be back on November 15th. I've got a friend of mine, David. He's one of my friends that I met in the military. He's currently stationed in Korea. So that's going to be another one of those ones where I'm probably going to be up at 3 o'clock in the morning recording with him.
Yeah.
You know, for him to be recording at like 6 o'clock at night. So, you know, kind of like it was with Brad. It'll be along those lines. But yeah, so he's got, well, he'll tell you about his like YouTube channel and everything when he's on. But yeah, so you look forward to that. And thank you guys for listening. Thank you to all of our patrons on Patreon for, you know, supporting us. We love and appreciate each and every one of you guys. You guys are awesome. So yeah, check us back out again on November 15th. And don't forget, Big Brother is watching.
Thank you so much for joining us for another episode of Conspiracies and Cryptids with Sammy and Tessa. Don't forget to check out our website, www.conspiriesandcryptids.com, for more episodes and other information.
And if you're really enjoying what we're doing, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/cryptipod. That's CRYPTIPOD. There you can find different ways to support us and get some awesome goodies along the way.
While you're at it, you can also find us on all of your favorite social media platforms like Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. That's any one of those at CryptiPod.
And if you're enjoying our podcast, please think about leaving us a 5-star review on iTunes. Leave us 5 stars and a nice little blurb about why you like us. It helps us to gain some traction and find some new listeners.
And while you're at it, don't forget to tell your friends, because our friends are your friends.
And don't forget, Big Brother is watching.